Hey everybody, welcome to Stage Voices. I am your host, Matt, and today we've got a very, very interesting show. Somebody who is very close to me, so close in fact that we live together. He was my roommate, Gabe, and he has a very, very interesting job, one that I actually didn't really know a whole lot about, so this was a very unique opportunity for me to jump in and find out what he does, what his roles are in theater, which I found was very, very important. Once again, we are coming to you from the network, A Modern Profession. We just joined the network. Well, actually, this podcast just joined the network. And you can check out this podcast plus many other great podcasts on amodernprofession.com. We've got Life's a Binge, Life's Moves. That's what happens when I don't do my tongue twisters in the morning, everybody. Life moves pretty fast. And Everything's Fine, Comics Talk Comedy. All those great, great podcasts are all waiting. This is going to be one heck of a podcast, kids. My gosh. Anyway, go to amodernprofession.com and you can check out more podcasts and wonderful shows. They got live shows happening that you can also check out. Anyway, though, this podcast right now, what you're listening to right now, Gabe Garcia, he works at Signet Theater, one of the, I would say, top theaters in San Diego. When people go to theater, I mean, there are those like the big SD Broadway and all that, the Globe. In my personal opinion, and I don't think that this is too far off, I would say that Signet is up there. It's pretty high class theater. That's one of the places that people go to see San Diego theater. They do great work. A lot of fantastic shows, a lot of great people working on those shows, a lot of talented people. And it's really cool that I know somebody, not only know somebody, but live with somebody who is so connected with that theater. It's really cool. So what Gabe does is called development, a very, very important job, very important to theater, especially if you are in your own building, which can get pretty costly, pretty expensive. And it's really, really interesting to know about another aspect of theater that a lot of people just kind of assume happens just magically, because that's kind of how theater happens. It just magically happens. Well, let's go over and talk to Gabe right here, ladies and gentlemen, Gabe Garcia on Stage Voices. I'm excited to get you on this because I've never really, oddly enough, asked you too much about your theater background. Only that you've done stuff.
Only, you know, behind the scenes.
Well, yeah. And I think one interesting thing about this podcast. Okay. I guess we'll go ahead and call this. We're starting.
Okay.
I just did a bumper that we haven't heard yet. We haven't heard. I've already heard it in the future. This is the past, except this is the present right now for us.
Wait, but this is not the time travel podcast.
Yes,
this is not
the time travel podcast. Cool. So, hello everybody and welcome to Stage Voices. We are sitting here with finally a good friend of mine, and roommate and everything else, also a podcasting veteran on the other podcast, which is The Arrow of Time. You can hear him all the time over there with his opinions of Doctor Who and more.
More sporadically than...
Yeah, more sporadically. We have opinions of a lot of things that happen. But this is Mr. Gabe Garcia over here. Hello, Gabe.
Hello.
So you have been a huge, huge, I guess, proponent in the theater community, especially in the San Diego theater community. And this podcast is not just for the people that are on stage, but the people who do the things behind the scenes. And one thing that I've always thought was interesting about your position was I've never actually seen you work like directly on a show, but more doing work for the theater, as like the theater as the entity of theater.
Yeah. So I've always worked in sort of the admin capacity.
Yeah.
I have worked in box office at a larger theater. I actually did venue bookings. I booked the theater for people. And for the past, gosh, like almost 6 years now, I've been working in development, which is fundraising.
Fundraising. So,
also fundraising, but
yeah, fundraising. Yes. So what you're doing right now, and so you're currently with Signet, you're the part of the fundraising, department over there.
Yeah. So I'm the development associate. We're a smaller theater, so we only have we're a 2-person shop. My boss is the development director. So the sort of structure is, the development director focuses on major donors, and I'm more responsible for donors under $1,000. I also do the grant writing for the theater, and also help out. One of my big capacities is helping get items for the auction for the gala.
Nice.
And other odd jobs as assigned, which is
yeah, nice. Putting out the tables, setting the tablecloths, fixing the drinks.
Doing dishes,
yeah. All those things, which those are super important because those are like all the, just, you know, me taking the marketing class at SDSU, they just went over how important the galas are for the theaters, because that's one of the big, big things that, makes all the subscribers and the fancy people that, give the theater tons and tons of money. That's like the big important thing for them.
Right. And I think one of the big things, people who don't work in theater, they don't usually realize that most theaters, especially in San Diego, are nonprofit. So most theaters have to raise anywhere from 30% to half of the budget or more from special events like galas by getting individual donations from your folks, whether it's subscribers or not. And also from grants from the government, from corporations, from foundations. So that mix helps keep the ticket prices low, or at least relatively low. If you look, the big professional theater presenter in town is Broadway San Diego, and you look at their tickets, even though they have a huge theater, 3,000 seats.
Is that Civic?
Yeah.
Okay.
They actually have two. They're also the Balboa. But they have a lot of seats, and they still charge like $200 a ticket for really good seats, because they rely solely on ticket sales. And they also have sponsors and whatnot, but
yeah,
they're for profit, so they actually cannot raise donations and have people write that off on their taxes. People that give to Signet's relatively, you know, kind of a mid-sized theater. People that give to Signet, the Old Globe, which is huge, the La Jolla Playhouse, which is huge, or smaller theaters like the Diversionary or Ion. All those theater companies are nonprofit, so any donation you give to them, you can then claim on your taxes.
Oh, interesting. So that's all for the, basically like what you are doing is making it so, people can like, you know, pay less, and you are bringing in like all this fundraising, all this money for the theater. Like you're going out there and you're basically like making it affordable for everybody.
Affordable is kind of, I guess, relative. especially let's talk about the Globe, because the Globe is,
yeah,
not only the big game in San Diego, it's one of the, you know, nationally recognized League of Repertory Theater companies.
Yeah.
Their top ticket price is over $100 too, and they have three theaters. I think all three of their theaters are larger than Signet's theater at Old Town. They still charge over $100, but they also then have specials for students, for seniors, you know, various things to keep it affordable for those who can't pay.
Yeah.
And they also do special education events like they've been doing the Globe for All, where they actually take, a show and kind of do it in community centers and places where they can reach people that can't afford to buy a ticket, period.
Right.
So to say it's affordable, it's kind of relative, but yeah, the shorthand is by raising money, we're able to charge less. And it's important in a place like San Diego, where we don't necessarily have the audiences that can pay $200 a ticket to go support 30 theaters around the county, to keep the ticket prices low enough that we can get people to come through the door.
Right. So what are some places that you usually kind of look to? So like when you're talking about fundraising, are you going out and looking for people to then or like societies to donate, or is that something else?
It's kind of something else. Yeah. So generally, as a theater company grows, they start off with a close-knit circle, or any nonprofit, really. They have a close-knit circle of supporters, and those people give individually for the program. And depending upon the nonprofit, you can seek out other corporate foundation government funding. But usually at first, funders want to see a little bit of history, so you rely on that very core group to support them. And then as they grow, so like as a theater company, for example, grows, they get subscribers. You kind of want to deepen the relationship with them. You educate them about how much of your budget comes from donations. And hopefully, if they like your work, they'll start giving to you and you start to grow your donor base. And then once you have a track record of history, you can start going for more corporate foundation government funding as well.
Oh, nice. So just kind of leapfrogging and growing. Maybe not leapfrogging, but yeah, just growing and growing and growing and starting at one smaller place and just making it large so you can get all funded.
Right. And not everybody always can make it. You know, there are always tragic stories. You know, it looks like Moelle locally is struggling, for example. We had theater companies that were renowned, like Sledgehammer, that went away, maybe coming back, but it's hard to say for sure.
I remember Sledgehammer.
Yeah. So it's not always possible to make it. It's actually can be very difficult.
Yeah.
For nonprofit theater. It sounds easy because you get donors to write off their donations on their taxes, but it's still a struggle because until you get the size of, like, say, the Globe or the Playhouse that have 20-plus million-dollar budgets, they can kind of afford to absorb, if the economy slows down. Like, we lost a lot of theater companies and arts groups around San Diego during the recession a few years ago.
Yeah.
Because if you're small and you're basically living sort of paycheck to paycheck, for lack of a better term, a recession can really crush you.
Yeah, that was really, really devastating for a lot of places. Because it's one of those things that kind of like hits everywhere where you want to bring good theater, good expensive theater to the community, but it all kind of depends. If you are going off of ticket sales, or because I feel like there's a lot of maybe smaller theaters, and maybe I'm getting this wrong, but when I think of Sledgehammer and I think of some of the more independent ones, like Signet is pretty strong and stable, and in their they have their own theater, they're their own like entity. So but like when you have some of the more independent theater companies going around, I mean, it seems like you can't really get a whole lot of funds. You can't get a whole lot of donors. I mean, I guess you could. You'd have to be very, very clever about it. But it just seems like being not housed, I guess, if you don't have a building, it's harder.
Well, actually, very few theaters own their space.
Yeah.
At Signet, for example, it's a lease with the state of California, so that theater's owned by the state of California. San Diego Rep, for example, leases the Lyceum. Yeah. It's actually very rare for a theater to own its own space.
Okay. Because it used to be, well, it's the theater in Old Town.
Yeah.
I guess.
So for a long time, Miracle Productions, which was for profit, actually worked out of that spot. And when they stopped producing, Signet did an RFP and with the state and won the bid.
Oh, nice. So now here you are. So you also mentioned that you do a lot of grant writing, and I've seen you do a lot. You whip out a lot of those like blogs and stuff. So your writing is really, really strong. And you say that's what you do all day is you write. So is it?
Well, I wish that's what I did all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say writing is probably my single strongest skill.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, how I got into theater is kind of a backward story. I started working in a box office my freshman year of high school.
Yeah.
Sorry, high school, college. Duh.
Did you have any passion for theater before or interest? Because also, here's the thing that I wanted to talk about is a lot of people get into theater, even if they're not on stage actors or designers or whatever, they get into theater from, you know, acting, or maybe they're like, oh, I like to do tech, like working directly on shows. And I've never really heard of any performance history or tech background that you've mentioned.
Correct. So I had a few friends that were in theater when I was going through school.
Yeah.
But I was never a performer, never really into that. So then when I was a freshman in college, I just started working just for a paycheck in a box office. And my major actually was journalism at San Diego State University. And after time, I started really liking the theater. And then...
What theater was it?
It was actually... not a traditional theater. It was East County Performing Arts Center.
Oh, so ECPAC.
It was mostly concerts, but there was the occasional, like, we would do like a weekend of a show, or, you know, even a one-off of a show, but it was mostly concerts.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That place got like shut down and quarantined.
Yeah, it's too bad. But yeah, but that was my first entry into the theater world. And again, it was mostly not theater, but the theater that I really liked. And I'd been in nice. Some theater before when I was younger in high school, but it was never a passion necessarily.
Right.
So then that really hit me though was when I got a job working for the Performing Arts League, which is an umbrella organization, still exists, that represents a lot of different theaters. And so in a sense, I was working for now like 30 different theaters.
Really?
And well, because we represented them.
Yeah.
And I worked for the Artistics booth, and we sold half price tickets. For a few theaters, we sold their full price tickets. And it really opened my eyes. I was all of a sudden getting invited to go see shows at the Old Globe, the Playhouse, the Rep, Diversionary, Sledgehammer. You know, there were so many. It was a really, really exciting time. This was the early 2000s.
Oh, and wow.
So that was a good thing, is now suddenly... It's opened my eyes to the theater world. The bad thing is they offered me a full-time job, so I left college for a while.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. And I truly, truly fell in love with seeing so-called straight plays. I wasn't really into musicals yet. But yeah, so that was that. And I worked there for a number of years, got to know a lot of theaters, a lot of theater people. And
so did you work like pretty tightly with certain theaters?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much all the big and small theaters, at some point used Artistics. And I was actually, you know, working there when Signet was founded.
Oh, wow.
We sold the very first show out of the Artistics booth. And, it was a really exciting time to be in theater. This is, you know, before the recession. This is when theater was because San Diego has got a really exciting theater scene. People don't realize that had been anywhere else.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And it keeps on growing. Was there any kind of like feelings about Signet? Like, oh, who are these guys coming in?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that
everybody's very supportive over there.
Yeah. The general man, I can't speak for all the different theaters that we worked with, but I think the general feeling is a vibrant theater community is good for everybody, because it gives more jobs for the various artists, more jobs for the various admin people, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships, as you know, they say.
Right.
So I took a little bit of a diversion. I ended up finishing up my school at UW and worked in theater up there as well while I was going to school. I worked for, again, kind of a bigger theater complex. We had three different theaters. That's where I started off in box office, then went to booking the theater, and then eventually into fundraising.
Nice. So, like, when you worked at the ticket office, that kind of, like, passion and excitement propel you through all that? Because in some ways, it almost kind of seems like a job that would be kind of quite taxing, having to deal with all the selling things to the people and having to deal with angry people and people like canceling at the last minute.
I don't think so. I always thought of it more along the lines of when I was at the Performing Arts League, for example, selling tickets, I thought of it as sort of being an ambassador for the theater. Cause yeah. we were, for a lot of people, the public face of San Diego theater. People were coming to us, both residents and tourists, to see what was playing. They would, you know, get the What's Playing guide they used to publish that showed all the different shows around town, ask us questions. So part of the reason why I was going to see all these shows was because it was part of my job to be able to talk about them. But it was also because I really fell in love with it. So that's what I was able to bring to the customers, was being able to talk about these shows and say, well, I saw this and it's really great. And really kind of connect on that level. So I never really bothered me. But I think for a lot of people that work in box office, it's either someone like me who was just looking for a job while they were a freshman in college, or they're somebody that works in the theater that needs a part-time job because they're acting at night.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you got to deal with the whole gambit of people working there, huh?
Yeah.
And you were the boss.
No.
Oh.
When I was at the Artistics booth, I was for a number of years, I was the manager of the booth. But really, we worked for the various theater companies.
Yeah.
So it was our job to make sure that they were represented well.
What about when you were at UW?
Well, so at UW, I by that point realized I wanted to get more into the theater.
Yeah.
So I picked a major. It was art, media, and culture. And I did a nonprofit in nonprofit management.
Yeah.
So what it really boiled down to is I was able to sort of create my own major. And it was very theater and literature heavy. I took classes on like everything from the history of theater to Shakespeare and lots of comparative literature. For nonprofit management, it was, you know, management and fundraising and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And actually, when I was there for my nonprofit minor, I had to do an internship. So I interned at a theater up there. And as part of my internship, I actually got to learn a lot of things. I learned how to, you know, use a soundboard and a light board. And
really?
Yeah. So I did very, very basic things, like mostly, you know, just hitting the cues. But everything from that to sweeping the stage to handing out posters, all, you know, all that kind of stuff.
That's interesting. That's definitely a thing I didn't know about you. About, you know, you're trained on lighting boards and soundboards, and you could do all this neat fancy things.
So my time really, because intern basically is, you know, like a unpaid lackey.
Yeah.
So I got to run the soundboard once when they had a rental in the theater for like some like little kid show.
Yeah.
So I had to sit there and, you know, I had the little list of cues and hit the button. We had like one rehearsal and then the show, but they didn't want to pay an actual employee to do that. So it was me.
Oh, love those internships. Yeah. Where you get all of the experience.
Well, I did actually also write a grant as part of the internship. It was actually two quarters that I interned for the theater. And the grant was funded. So that was also
nice. So your big skill, you'd say it would be like in grant writing or writing in general?
Writing in general.
Yeah.
So I mentioned, when I first started off, I thought I was going to be a journalist.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out. But I was always able to just bang something out quickly. And now...
And good. Bang a good thing out quickly.
Hopefully, usually, yes. But now, you know, I can sit down. I never have writer's block. I can just go.
Wow. That is a huge, huge thing to say, because With writing, I am terrible. Like when it comes to sitting down and getting writer's block, because it seems like I always have writer's block. And it's not until I actually start physically writing things that I can actually write anything. But actually, it won't be in my head first. It'll just be like the practice of doing it. But you can just like come down and pop anything out.
Yeah, I mean, basically.
That's great.
That's sort of, you know, that's sort of my job. And that's sort of, you know, when it comes down to it, I really like writing. I feel like I'm able to get across a point, even if it's not necessarily the best point. It's not by any stretch brilliant, but it's also what got me through school. There were plenty of times when, going even back to high school, when I didn't actually necessarily read the entire, but I was able to write my way out of it because I was able to write in a way that convinced teachers and professors that I knew what I was doing. I think it's probably, I mean, it's not so similar, because I do think that when you write a grant, they have a little closer eye, but a lot of these people also get, in some cases, you know, hundreds of applications as well. So it is not necessarily like they're always going through with a fine tooth comb either.
Right. I mean, you have to kind of change somebody's mind, right? You have to convince somebody to give you money.
Right. So it's important to make a compelling case.
Yeah.
It really helps. It's funny because I keep feeling like I have the hang of Cygnet, but every, you know, season that I've been there, I get a little bit more knowledge and it's a little bit easier to make a compelling case, because you sort of start to absorb the history and culture of the organization. So I couldn't imagine now, looking back, when I was my first week on the job writing a grant, and I don't know how I did it.
Yeah. Now, did you do grants before that, or was Cygnet like where you kind of cut your teeth?
So it was the theater where I worked at up in Seattle area, where I was actually working doing the venue bookings rentals department. And they actually asked me to help with a grant.
Right.
Yeah. And it was basically a lot of the work was doing research and then writing help. Starting to draft a kind of rough narrative of making a case for why funding this grant would help the organization.
Yeah.
And it was based on that work that I was invited to join the development department there. There I was, from when I started there, I actually was only working with donors, more or less writing letters, asking individual donors for money, writing thank you letters, processing their gifts, stuff like that.
Nice. So you're just like kind of there as, representing people and making sure like all the gifts go through.
Well, there's actually something related to development and box office, and that is... Yeah. You are sort of the bureaucracy of the organization, in the sense that when somebody who wants to talk to you to get service from the theater, they're going to call the box office, or if they're a donor, they're going to call development.
Yeah.
So it's really, in that sense, it's actually very similar, because we get people all the time calling us in the development department, both me and my boss. They want to do a ticket exchange, or they want to buy tickets, or they have a question, or they need, you know, whatever. Reservations for dinner, and we do all that kind of stuff for them. So, and there is a lot of time, especially in a small theater like Cygnet, where it does come down to, like, again, still just like writing letters to individual donors, writing them emails, answering their phone calls. So it is really a lot more than just grant writing, even though in theory that should be my major focus.
Yeah. Man, yeah, because it seems like there's always going to be a ton of things that, especially in theater, that you're going to do regardless of what your actual title is. Because they never seem to have enough.
In a small theater especially, now I'd be willing to bet you that the grant writer at the Globe just writes grants.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'd be willing to bet you they have more than one. They probably have one focused on more like government and one focused more on corporate foundation kind of stuff.
Yeah, corporate foundation more.
Yeah.
And do you do any of the corporate foundation stuff?
A little bit. I've done a few proposals for sponsorships and trying to get various corporate I guess, participation with the theater.
Yeah.
There is, it's a little bit trickier. It's a lot of times they want a sponsorship where it is, we'll give you this amount of money and you give us an ad in the program and tickets and whatnot. Or what's even more common is we'll give you this service and you give us recognition as a donor at that level, which is like an in-kind donation. And that's what they want more, and that's not always very easy to negotiate. So the long answer is a little bit.
A little bit, yes.
Yeah.
Wow. So
all right, the short answer is a little bit.
Yeah. So when you're in this development role, do you, I'm assuming that you have kind of close ties with certain, you know, people that are giving to the theater. Do you a little bit, or
I mean, they're definitely so donors that give to Signet.
There are people that know your name out in the community.
Well, Signet donors, yes. Yeah. You know, I'm usually present at most of the receptions and opening nights and things. So it's especially people that I've developed a relationship with. You know, I ask them how they like the show. We talk, you know, a little bit about our backgrounds and get to know each other a little bit. So yeah, I mean, you definitely cultivate a relationship. We recently had a change at Signet where our development director left and we have a new development director. And there are some donors that used to call the old director that now call me because they know me.
So that's a huge part, is the trust between the relationship between the donors and the in the theater. So it's you now.
Well, among some people, yeah. You know, are more focused on speaking with the director, regardless of who it is.
Yeah.
So it's different. But I mean, yeah, after I've been there for 4 years, and after 4 years, you get to know people pretty well. And there are a few that I would say that I would continue to speak with on a personal level, you know, after I'm gone.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So you actually have those relationships.
Yeah.
I feel like relationships are one of the things that really pushes, you know, theater forward. And I mean, that's the thing that kind of takes it from what we were taught in the marketing class, is that when you have like all these rich people flying around, you know, giving to the theater, it's like, what can the theater offer them that they don't already have? Like, what special thing can you do to make them? Because it's like, I don't know. Cheap tickets? Well, I mean, they're already donating, or, you know, free shows are already donating so much money to the theater. Like, they're not really in need of discounts. So it's just that other part of like making them feel, you know, it's service.
Well, one of the things you learn, or I think early on in development, no matter actually the organization, whether it's a theater or something else, is you kind of learn to get to know the donors and what they're looking for. And it's different for every donor.
Yeah.
Some people, they could be millionaires, but they really like getting that free wine at concessions. And there are other donors that actually want to pay for everything. You know, the benefit might include, well, here's free tickets to the show. They're like, no, I'm going to subscribe, so I don't want the free tickets.
Oh, wow.
It's really different for everybody. And it's important for everybody who works in development to get to know what their audience, or, you know, donors in this case, what they want, and give it to them.
It's so interesting because you have the kind of the key to, and this is a thing where not a whole lot of people realize that this is where theater kind of comes from. I mean, there are the, you know, the idea people and the creative and the designers and stuff, but then it all has to come from somewhere. The money has to come from somewhere. And here is like all these people kind of in the background that are funding everything and really pushing everything forward, making it possible. And you're kind of like the key to all of it. You're going and you have this relationship and you're like funneling in, you're making it so these people who have the money will also kind of keep on giving and having that really great relationship.
Well, I think it's bigger than that. I think that Everybody, every role in a nonprofit theater is important. you know, obviously it comes down to the art. And that's really why I continue to work in theater, is I enjoy the art. You know, when I see a show, it usually still, you know, gives me chills, makes me think. I leave the theater talking about what's up. I mean, so really, I think for everybody, it does come down to the art. But everything else is still important. If you don't have marketing, people don't know about it. If you don't have development, then the ticket prices go up, or they have to cut the shows or cut the quality. Backstage, the crew, everybody plays a critical role. And without one, something else has to go away too.
Wow, it's so odd that it's interesting that it's just such a balance that, you know, you never think about.
And ideally, most theaters should spend the bulk of their money on the art. You know, when you look at pretty much any healthy nonprofit theater, the vast majority should go towards the art. And then the fundraising and the admin overhead should be relatively low.
Yeah. So do you get to have any kind of artistic input or say in what you think would be best for the theater to do? Or do you just sort of have to kind of go with what has already been decided?
Well, I think it's at most theaters, it's common for, and actually it's critical that artistic lead. So the people that are in charge of the department, in our case, it's Sean Murray, their artistic director, that they set the sort of the tone and the direction for the artistic programs. And I think at most theaters, it is pretty common to feel that development should not be doing programming. Now, that being said, we do have meetings. If you pitch an idea that somebody likes, it's always possible that something might happen from it. But it's definitely not a case of any department other than artistic setting the artistic tone.
Right. So you have like, you know, input, and they can kind of take it or leave it. But really, it's Sean Murray feeling everything.
Right. And now we recently hired an associate artistic director, and he also, you know, obviously has some input. But at the end of the day, it's Sean. And I think in most theaters that have an artistic director, that person sets the tone. You know, when you look at the rep, you know, it's Sam Woodhouse and so forth.
Right, right.
Again, most healthy organizations do have two-way communication with their patrons, so they are aware of, you know, what's going on in their heads, which isn't to say that they should necessarily pander to the audience. I think that one of the things that sets Signet apart is it is challenging. It's thought-provoking theater. That's partly why I tend to enjoy the shows, is it's not so-called easy theater.
It is not easy theater, yeah.
Yeah, if you want easy theater, then you're probably going to go for something more like professionally Broadway San Diego or maybe Lambs or something it's a little more safe.
A little more safe, yeah, exactly. So is that one of the things that really drew you then to Signet in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, who wouldn't want to work at the Globe? But to be quite honest, though, right when I started at Signet, I went and saw a couple of shows at the Globe like that same month.
Yeah.
And I'd been seeing a lot of Signet, obviously. Signet does incredible work.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Considering working on a tenth of the budget, the artistic quality of Signet is so high. And when I'm feeling discouraged or, you know, down on my situation, I'll see a show and it really re-energizes me. You know, because again, that's why I am in the theater, is basically it comes down to the art. Even though I've never done anything myself on stage, that's really why I'm there.
Yeah, and I think it's really good that you have these insights to theater, and you can talk about theater, and you can, because that just seems like it's one of the main aspects of reaching out to people. On you're not just some, you know, like number cruncher, or, you know, even just somebody, you know, writing and getting people to donate, but you're also there person to person, you know, being an ambassador. Exactly. Right. You know, talking to people and saying like, oh, well, I really like this, and this is, you know, this is the play that I like, or I'm really a fan of this kind of, you know, musicals.
Right. And that really helped with my job I had when I was the league, because I saw so much theater in those years I worked there.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I learned a lot just by going to the theater. And then when I sort of was designing my program at UW, I really made it very theater focused. So I saw more theater, but also in a academic setting where I'm learning a little bit more about some of the themes behind it, how to actually think about it critically, and even basics like the history of theater. So going all the way back, I think it was mostly basically starting with Greek theater, but it was still fascinating for me to all the stuff that, as somebody who came into theater kind of late, that I kind of missed out on, and I was really able to sort of get a little catch up.
Yeah, I mean, you've drank it all up. And considering that, you know, you say that you came into theater late, you have a lot of knowledge of, especially like classics and Shakespeare. And I mean, you have like these favorite Shakespeare plays, and not just like, I would say, you know, the hits that everybody goes to, but, you know, the Henrys.
Yeah, I do like Henry the Fifth.
Yes. Yes. So, and you saw a lot of those plays. Is this where you went to Ashland?
Yeah. So as part of the program, we went to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival every summer, and saw, you know, usually at least three different Shakespeare plays. So I got to see the entire, over the course of, you know, a couple of years, the entire you know, Henry tetralogy.
So, somebody who is kind of, you know, coming in a little bit late, what really drew you into the Shakespeare's? Cause that can be kind of, tough to like, was that something that, you really challenged yourself to get, did it just like hit you immediately? Were you already in that frame of mind that you can absorb all of the language?
So I actually started liking Shakespeare, just reading it, going back to high school. I think as somebody who's always liked to write, I really appreciated the beauty of Shakespeare's language. So it was something that when I went to, part of what I wanted to do when I went to UW was, as I said, kind of catch up, and I really focused on the classics. Had, like I said, several Shakespeare classes, but also other things. Like I took you know, ancient Greek drama. There was a number of things that I wanted to focus on, just that I didn't want to feel like I would be in a situation where somebody would say something and I would feel like an idiot.
Yes.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's very, very easy to do that.
Yes.
But then, like, when it comes down to theater, I feel like there's a lot of people that really don't know a lot of that. So you can almost, you're kind of like at that scholar level.
Not yet.
He can like school people on.
Sort of one of my goals is to go back, and I really actually, it's not going to be necessarily great for the direction I've been going, but I really want to go back and get my MFA.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be focused mostly on writing, obviously.
Have you written anything like creatively?
I have. I've not written any like plays, but obviously I read a lot of plays now, and I've mostly so far written short stories creatively.
Oh, nice. So, is there any themes to these short stories?
Not really. I tend to be a big fan of character pieces.
Yeah.
So I think that most of what I write, and some of what I really like, in theater is more character driven than plot driven. Like just last weekend I saw Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
And, yeah, yeah.
I love Edward Albee. I've seen the play before.
It was great.
But that is one of my favorite plays. And it's really like, the person I went with was like, well, what was that about? And it's like, well, it's not really about anything. It's just some damaged people on display for a couple hours.
It is. It really is. And I think that that's what Albee kind of, like how he writes. I think of Zoo Story. One of the first big Albee things that I was exposed to. And that is just really like, there's two people and they're just together and they're strangers and they don't know each other. And you just kind of see this weird kind of twisted relationship unravel. And here's this very nice, proper guy, and here's this kind of deranged guy, and and how it kind of, the shocking way that it ends. But it's very, very, that writing style is another thing that really attracts me, because you're just watching these people, these characters.
Right.
So when there isn't necessarily a plot being told to you, you're just there, you're just sitting there and watching these two characters just unfold.
Right. And I love that.
Yeah.
And I think eventually we'll see what happens, but if I get into this program, I want to go to SDSU.
Great.
And I'm sure that in addition to writing prose, I will also try to see if I can get some training and try to write a play.
Yeah. Well, when I was in the stage writing, the playwriting class at SDSU, which was a lot of fun. There were some creative writing MFAs there who, that was like an elective for them to take. They're like, oh, this could fulfill something. And it was really, really interesting. The route that some of the creative writing students went. Yeah. It's really, really cool. Really interesting.
Yeah. So that's the program I want to go into, is the creative writing MFA.
That's great.
So apparently I can take the playwriting class if I get in, and it's still set up the same way it is now, but
yeah,
we'll see.
I would think so. That's great. Well, as we wrap up here, what would you say that, I guess, your take on theater, maybe like any like philosophies on, how to approach it? Because I think that you've taken a unique approach, just kind of what your history has been in. And I mean, not to I guess give a knock to, you know, other people, especially people that I've talked to. I mean, I do feel like it's really easy to jump in the theater, especially after you've been bitten by, you know, certain bugs, like the acting bug or the technical theater bug. But you've just really have dove into all of this through almost kind of like this back entrance.
Yeah.
And you've loved it.
I have. And it's really, it's hard to say there's a philosophy, because I think that one of the great things about theater, and I would say art in general, is it's different things to different people.
Yeah.
I always tell people, at the end of the day, the nice thing about theater is it's not life and death.
Yeah.
We're not working in the ER here. But I think for some people, you know, if you have that passion, it can feel like it's as important as life or death. But other people, you know, not so much. There are people that I know that work in theater, both on stage and off stage, that have a very casual, laid back view. And it's like, this is something that I'm doing right now, and maybe not always.
Yeah.
So I think it really can be whatever you want it to be. And that's kind of the great thing about theater is, you know, who knows, maybe someday I will write a play, and maybe someday it'll even get, you know, put on stage somewhere. You never know. But right now I'm writing grants, and I've done other things in theater too. And there's not really, you can kind of, whatever you can make of it if you have the skill. And one reason why I've never acted is I don't have that skill. You know, but if you can do it, then there's a spot for you.
You've done some pretty great acting on The Arrow of Time when we did sketches. Oh, dear. But, great. Well, it was great talking to you, Gabe.
Thanks. It was great to talk to you.
Yes. And thank you for coming on and doing this little podcast here.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody, that was Gabe Garcia. I hope you enjoyed the interview. There's a lot of fun stuff in there, a lot of unique views on how to go about the theater scene, how to get into theater. It was very, very interesting, first off, for me, because like we talked about before, theater, a lot of people get into theater by way of acting or by way of a technical theater. Not a whole lot of people just kind of slide in, you know, through the the ticket marketplace. At least somebody who I really know of. And yeah, so it's just really, really cool. All the other different aspects of theater that make it what it is, that make it stand. All right, well, you can definitely check out this podcast and more. Check out, we're on iTunes and Podomatic. All wonderful, wonderful things. You can check us out on our website that just went up. And there you have all the information to go. You can listen to podcasts. You can go check out our Twitters at Stage Podcast. Check out the Facebook page. The Facebook page is nobody types in Facebook page addresses. So I'll just say go ahead and search for it, because it's some atrocious thing of like the name plus a string of numbers. And I have not updated that. Or maybe I accidentally did, and it's just forever a horrible, horrible address. So you don't have to worry about that. We have a nice little Facebook button for you that does all that wonderful stuff for you. Then be sure to check out our network, amodernprofession.com. Again, we have Life's a Vinge. Can I just not say a podcast title correctly? Is that my curse right now? I have this great new network that I'm a part of, and I can't say any podcast title correctly. Okay. Life's a Binge. Everything's Fine. This Week in Zoltan. All wonderful podcasts that you can check out and listen to, amongst other things like live shows. So that's it for this episode of Stage Voices. I have been Matt, and this has been Stage Voices. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the sun? Just remember when they come up.
Thank you for listening to A Modern Profession Podcast. For more podcasts you might enjoy and information on live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check us out on Twitter at @amodernpro or on Instagram at @amodernprofession. Thank you. Good night.